Abani Ghani, everyone.
Abani Ghani.
This is Professor
Amen.
This is Professor Amin-Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, former city councilman for the city of Compton, California, former Compton College Board of Trustees, former Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees. We want to welcome you here to the Black Conscious Corner, where we're going to have a very, very in-depth discussion on the historical Black colleges. But before we get started, I want to say our panel for this evening is Brother Ernest McBride, who's a historical archivist for his father, Ernest McBride, out of Long Beach. Ernest McBride is well known for his work in civil rights and advancing the cause of African Americans in Long Beach and throughout LA County. He's well known. They named schools, parks, and recreation centers after him. And Brother Ernest Jr. is his archivist, and he has an in-depth profile of his father's work in civil rights and the Optimist, starting the first NAACP, as well as Optimist Club in Long Beach. We have Brother Ahi out of Detroit. Brother Ahi is a longtime activist from coast to coast, a traveling man, strong Omega, strong brother, that's in a deep thinker, that always have courageous questions, and just a strong person to give us that East Coast and flavor whenever we need to know what's going on that end. We have Sister Linda Florida, it's Linda Short out of Florida, who has a virtual museum on Black history, as well as she was one of the publishers of the Black Long Beach newspaper, along with Ken Wibberkan. And at the same time, she and her brother operated one of the first Black culture centers in the Long Beach area. She now resides in Florida, where she is consistently working with the Florida Black community, and her family is a legend, especially her mom and her brother Reggie, Reginald Muhammad, who is one of the leaders in the reparation movement, who's residing in Atlanta. We also have Brother Rashiki Maskani, who is the really the brother that provides us this platform, Community Education Network. And he is a longtime activist, as well as former superstar basketball player for Compton High, as well as sent to Cal State University of Long Beach, where he attended, graduated, and a longtime educator for the Compton Unified School District, where he's worked with many youth throughout his career. And then at the same time, we have our special guest tonight, a true friend and a true person. She's Dr. Teresa Price. And she was a student at Cal State Long Beach, went on to do magnificent things in entrepreneurship. And now she's one of the leading persons that work with the Black colleges, the HBCUs, taking students on tours, and just recruiting and encouraging people to take advantage of the opportunities of those college of the HBCUs. HBCUs are very important in the history of Black people. Some even say that's our first form of reparation. You know, there's some controversy all the time with them, and there's that most of them in the South. There's a few on the East Coast, but most of them are in the South. And most of them are small schools that got land grants and were mostly Christian institutions. But Booker T. Washington and others, W.E.B. Du Bois, them all were a part of the movement toward using education as a tool and a weapon.
Right.
To advance our cause. And most of the Black colleges started because at the time they were starting, Black people couldn't go to white colleges. And so we move on. So without further delay, Dr. Teresa, as I was saying, a Price is a longtime outstanding community servant. Her brother, I went to school with, Centennial, Leonard Randall, who set all kind of athletic records in baseball and football. Went on to play pro baseball in the National Baseball League, I think it was Texas,
Yeah,
and
Texas Rangers.
Texas Rangers. And he stood out, and he's just a beautiful spirit. We have to say, as he has made his transition, but his legacy will always be honored and respected. So without further delay,
Yes.
Lynn's going to tell you a little bit about what she do and the relevancy of why more of our people need to attend HBCUs under this auspices of enrollment enhancement there because of the of them getting rid of the diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. All right, go ahead, Teresa.
Yeah, hello, good evening, everyone. I'm excited to be here. You know, we all love the amazing, amazing Professor Amon-Ra, who has, I told him, I'll never forget my very first class that I took at Long Beach State when he seated me with wisdom that I walked out of there with my eyes bucked open, like, wow. So I think that just led me to just continue to empower other people. I ended up in this, you know, when first of all, let me just say, when you think about it, black colleges is the only thing we own. HBCUs, when you really think about it, you strip it all down. What do we own? That's all we own. So I always tell people, you know, one of my HBCU coaches said that to me, and I just said it resonated. And I said, you know what, you're right. She said, what else do we own? We need to like be all in, all of us, whether we go to one, we don't go to one, we send our kids or not, we need to all invest in our HBCUs. And I say there are educational churches to me. I think, you know, they're expected to do so much with so little. So we've been in this work for 27 years. We've helped over 700,000 students get into college. 67% of them are HBCUs. And I just believe that our HBCUs build the best leaders. I mean, they shape and form us. They gave us identity. They gave us, they empower us. They allow us to know our history. They allow us to feel worthy, valued, all of those things. Because when you step on that campus, you know that you matter. You know that you're valued. You know your history. And just walking on our ancestral, the grounds, it just empowers you. And so I think it does so, I think attending HBCUs do so many things for our community. So it's like I work with all kinds of students from all different backgrounds, and I just say that just see the difference in just the leadership of an individual that has attended HBCU. So I'm empowered to empower others. I work with, you know, we got 94. I know everybody's shift between 107. Is it 104? Is it 106? That last history I did is like 105. There's 94 4-year HBCUs and about 11 2-year HBCUs. And so, you know, they offer every, you know, like you said, originally they were for teachers and preachers when they first started because we couldn't attend. Richard Humphreys bequests money to the first HBCU, which was Cheney University in 1837. And out of that, you know, that's because we couldn't go to school, but he saw differently and allowed that to happen. And then from there, you know, all of them at the time were teachers and preachers. And now today, you got everything from, you know, from archaeologists to engineers to zoologists, you know, they offer everything you can think of and an STEAM area. And even, you know, schools like people don't know, HT, Houston Tellison in Austin, you know, I was talking to Dr. Wallace, the president there, and a lot of people don't know they have a doula program, you know, and so you don't know that these things exist. So our HBCUs have everything. So I guess I'm here to empower. You tell me, I'll just say this off the top. Black students at HBCUs graduate 33% more likely to graduate than at non-HBCUs. So 33% more likely to graduate black students from a HBCU than a non-HBCU. HBCUs foster more upward mobility, civic engagement among graduates as well. A lot of people don't realize that 50% of all teachers have graduated from HBCU. 40% of all health professionals have graduated from HBCU. 70% of all dentists and physicians have graduated from HBCU. 70% of lawyers graduate from HBCU, and 80% of judges have graduated from HBCU. So that is what that we produce. We produce.
You have and continue to produce up until I would say the maybe this going into the mid-70s, almost the majority of all public school teachers graduated from HBCU.
I believe that.
Prior to that, many of them worked in post offices and for the civil rights movement that opened up this opportunity. And second, that the majority of black students that graduate in this country graduate from the HBCU. That's where the majority of our black students attend, HBCU. They play a very vital role in our intellectual wealth and intellectual progress, as she was saying, producing distinguished leaders from all areas of science, technology, as well as as well as activists and leadership.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And there's a lot of controversy, and a lot of people from the boards want to try to determine their curriculum and their course content and things of this nature, their trustees, but they've been steadfast in doing that. So we're going to go around and see. I just want to say my daughter graduated from Johnson C. Smith out of
Johnson, JCSU. Dr.
North
Kinlock would
Carolina.
love to hear you say that.
Yeah,
President Kinlock.
she got a basketball scholarship there.
Oh,
And she's
wow.
a
Awesome.
public teacher now in Moreno Valley.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, been there, and she wanted to get her master's out here though. But go ahead, Ernest. You have any questions about HBCUs or any comments?
No, not really. I know my granddaughter went to Hampton for a
Oh,
year
awesome.
and she loved it, but she got homesick,
She got
came back home. Now she's at Long Beach State. So.
yeah. You got the, you know what I tell people, if they can make it past the first 2 years, because you definitely don't get
She couldn't
homesick.
hang a second year.
Yeah, you get
And I've been
homesick.
in rural areas, rural areas. Okay, my brother, you have any comment? Are you there? You're on mute. You may have
I
stepped
am
up.
here. I'm just trying to get it. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. How you doing, sister? Good to
I
see you
am
here this
good,
evening.
brother. I'm good, brother. I'm excited to be on with my family.
Okay. Yes. Of course we all know HBCUs are pivotal in our progress here in the city, in this country. And as far as the progressive schools, now I know this is going to be kind of touchy.
No, it's okay. Go.
Oh, okay. As far as the historically black colleges being progressive, and I'm going to say it, unwilling to leave Negritude. As far as its curriculum, its unwillingness to use our own scholars as their sources of information. Is there a difference between those schools that were funded privately by Black people here in America as opposed to those that are funded by, I don't want to say people with white interests, but they kind of look
well, the
like
very
that.
First school, Cheney, was $10,000 was bequeathed to them from Richard Humphrey. So, I mean, but at the time it was just, you know, when they first started, they were teachers and preachers. So think about it, all the HBCUs that were funded, and that's why Charles Drew is not a historically Black college. They are a Black college, but it's not historical because it's post-Civil War, you know, 65. So it's like all of those schools were, you know, early on. So that they pretty much did what they needed to do to teach. It wasn't directed, the funds, from what I've seen and from what I, you know, nothing was directed to be whitewashed, I'll say it like that, or, you know, because, and then the thing is, when you think about all the city, the protests, you just start going and you start thinking about all the schools and where it started and, you know, all that started on the campuses HBCUs, when the, you know, all that stuff and the power, you know, the leaders, empowerment, you know, King going to Morehouse. I mean, you know, you just think about it. That all started at HBCUs, teaching how to stand, how to be advocates, how to advocate for yourself, how to, you know, stand up for stuff, how to protest, all that stuff. So I don't think any of who, Howard, most of them were funded either by, he was I want to say Richard Humphreys was he was out from the East Coast, you know? So, and a lot of them came out of the church. They were funded as, you know, their church, you know, funded out of the churches. So I wouldn't say that the curriculums changed at all, regardless of the who funded. Now, if you say today, well, naturally you can't have a HBCU today, you know what I'm saying? Because it would have to be pre-1964. But I would say even to this day now, it's like, it's, they, it is what it, I think that's why they produce so many leaders. I think that's why our students excel so well in those schools, because of the environment you're in, the understanding of the culture, the, you know, even the diversity that exists among Black people. People don't think about that. You know, you have country music lovers and you got jazz lovers, got hip hop lovers and you got rock lovers. So the same thing, you know, there's diversity amongst us that people forget.
Any other questions, Aki? Aki?
Can you hear?
Mm-hmm. You were
okay.
Yeah,
my point is this: more revolutionary instructors don't usually work in the Black colleges. For instance, Frances Cress Wilson, when she came out with a paper talking about her theory, yes. They let her go immediately, not because of her research and stuff was not valid. It's mm-hmm. because they didn't agree with the subject matter.
What
also,
university was she?
Howard. Okay. She's with the Bisons.
Okay.
Also, I want to say another thing about Howard, because because it seems like I meet quite a few people that come from Howard that would rather be called a Negro than an African. And my ex, when we started dating, she's a proud Bison, mm-hmm. generational, the different generations went there, had no idea who, I'm trying to think of the, our brother who is, he can really flip a metaphor. And he was a gay guy. I'm just, my mind is just racing right now. He was gay, but he really wrote beautifully about the Black experience, and he could really work with a metaphor. Baldwin.
Mm-hmm. James Baldwin.
Now, here she is, really accomplished, come from a family full of scholars, mm-hmm. and she has no idea who James Baldwin is. And she's a very literary person, and she graduates from Howard. And what I'm saying is, yes, we have a lot of scholars, but now we're at a pivotal point where our people are going there. And where are our institutions going to lead our people? How are we going to take a step toward our liberation if, in fact, our institutions themselves are stuck and don't want to become progressive enough to even listen to their own progressive scholars, if only to debate what they have to say?
Yeah, I couldn't comment on that only because I don't know the situation firsthand. So I wouldn't, I can only speak to this. See, my main thing and what I do every day is I work with students. That is my first and foremost focal point. And in that, where I try to meet them where they are to pull out the best in them. That's at our organization. All the people that work in this organization, that's kind of what it is, meeting students where they are and pulling out the best in them. And I'm only can speak from what I have seen from the students that we've worked with. And I mean, it's thousands, and they're from all over, not just from California, from all over the globe, you know, from all over, especially in the US. We've had a few, you know, Nigeria and Ghana, you know, a few other, Kenya, other students, but mainly US students. And the overall, I'm just gonna say overall, and I've had students that have attended PWIs and HBCUs, like they went to a PWI, then they went to HBCU, or they went to HBCU, and then they got their graduate degree at a PWI. And they all have said the same thing, that HBCU experience is like no other. It just made them realize who they were as a woman or man, as a Black woman or man, and it gave them value to hold their head high. And I'm just saying that in a nutshell, in terms of, and I think when we look at outcomes, and when they said they didn't have a problem being in a room with a person that went to Harvard, Yale, whoever, they felt like whatever HBCU they went to, they were just as good as they were. And I say, when you think about our young people and you think about them becoming their best selves, and you think about them going out and wanting to take over the world, that's what I want. I want to see, I want to feel that, because we need them to keep the marathon going. You know, at the end of the day, we have to continue to seed and feed our young people, because things that some things that we want as change, we might not see in our lifetime, but they can be the ones that can keep it going to make that happen. So for me, I'm just going to say, I'm feeding off of young people. I'm not feeding off of anything else, because we need to produce people that are going to run for office, who make sure we have seats, not a seat, but seats at the table, that are continuing to fight for things that to stand up for something. And that's kind of like where I am. So I can't really, you know, all I can look at is the outcome. What I see is the impact. What I'm seeing them continue to go, and, you know, like my student that is continuing to fight, like Justin, what's the guy out of Nashville? He's one of our babies. He's out there fighting in Nashville. He's in Tennessee fighting. He's working.
Yeah, he giving up the good
that's
fight.
That's what I want to see. That's all I care. At the end of the day, because I need him to keep it going. I need him and everybody like him to keep it going. I have a student one at Howard that wants to run for president. I mean, he said it since he's been in eighth grade. Now he's at Howard. He's still saying he wants to run for president. He's working on the Capitol Hill. He doesn't like what he sees. He wants to change it. He feels empowered. He could have went anywhere. He had the grades and everything. He chose to go there. What I'm looking at is the outcome, what I'm hearing from him as he goes through his junior year. That's what I talked to him today. That's what I care about. What is it giving? What kind of substance? What kind of empowerment? What kind of grit? What is that giving to our kids? Because I have kids that go to PWIs that don't come out with that same vigor. It's just a difference. I'm not saying that HBCUs are all. I'm not saying there aren't. I don't want nobody calling saying I'm not saying no. There are definitely students that come from all colleges. I'm just sharing that what I see in the HBCU and in abundance, are those things that I talked about. You know, I think about, and I'll talk about Dr. Lauren Crawford, who could have gone to anywhere. He was going to go to Stanford, but he decided to go to Clark Atlanta. He became the valedictorian at Clark Atlanta. Now that brother's teaching at Brown as a professor and on the doing research at Microsoft to solve to cure cancer. But he said it was his HBCU that gave him the vigor to do that. When he went to Duke, a PWI after Clark Atlanta, he ran circles around those kids. And it was because of the grit that he got from attending a HBCU. So that is, to me, that what the difference is for me. You know what I mean? I don't want to get, I personally, me, get caught up in, you know, because I want to see what is the outcome for our students. What does that look like?
Okay. Okay.
And I'm sorry, but that is, you know, that's who we should be caring. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day.
Yeah. But, you know, Howard, when there was a Black movement in the 60s, many of the Black colleges stepped up. They were empowered because it was a movement. You have lulls in the movement. Sometimes they fluctuate back because of financial reasons or whatever.
Oh man, they
you lose. You know, you have to do what you have to do to survive. There was a time when they were making a move on the Black colleges.
They're doing it. It's happening again. No. It's happening as we speak.
Yeah, well, they said they had to integrate.
Yeah.
They said they had, and many. Howard, you know, it's graduate schools are very strong. Dr. Frances Crest Welsing, she wrote the Crest Theory and she was up for tenure and they didn't give her tenure. She chose to leave and start her own practice and go around the country lecturing. But she was a former Chancellor Williams, who wrote the book Destruction of Black Civilization, attended Howard. But we'll get back to that. We had two more people that have joined us. Brother Mashinda out of Louisiana. He's here, longtime activist with young people. And we got historian Joe Hembrick, longtime educator for Linwood and Compton Unified School District, the first head Black coach, varsity football coach for Linwood Unified. And commissioned the first unity mural at Centennial High School, where Black and brown people were symbolically working together. And we have Brother Ijao, longtime activist, former Cal State Long Beach, who's joined us, who's a part of Black Building Black Men out of Long Beach area in this church. So we got them started also. But Linda, do you have any questions out of Florida, Linda?
Oh, yes. Yes, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. And thank you for coming on tonight. I was so excited when I saw that you were coming. First of all, I'm a graduate of two HBCUs. First of all, yes, ma'am, and I'm proud of it and I love it. And the first
which
one-
two? Which two?
First of all, I'm a Rattler, Florida A&M University.
All right.
And also,
Rattler. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. And the next one, of course, the Florida Memorial, which is now
Florida
University.
Yes.
And I am so proud of both of them.
Yes.
And so if I have to ask questions, and I definitely need to talk with you later, but the first thing is my concern about the HBCUs, because everybody should attend. If you mm-hmm. got a grandchild, you, in fact, I was talking to my granddaughter last night, and I was telling her, she said, yeah, I still want to go to FAMU, and she's in 11th grade, and so I'm always promoting, because I understand what you were saying about not just they are our future, but that's where they get their start, because when I was in college, I used to think, I'm not just not another social security number, and
yeah.
you people
they know you by name.
And in fact, when I went to my graduate level, of course, I went to a white school, but so it was totally different, I'm telling you. That's why I promote for children now to go to the HBCU. And now my concern, because you've been doing all these statistics on it, with the politics today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in Florida with the mm-hmm. yes. And FAMU itself, he appointed, not the people, not the students, but he appointed this new president.
I know, yeah.
And so we were all in an uproar, and we tried watching her daily to see what's going on. So my question to you is, since politics is a large part of the HBCUs, do you see anything with enrollment going down with it, or the money's
actually coming? Can I tell you, if I showed you my roster of kids, we give scholarships away to probably about 300 to 400 students a year. And I remember when we first started, you know, it wasn't as, you know, we started 27 years ago. So less than 3% of students were going to HBCUs in California when we started in California. Now we national, so we're in New York, DC, you know, whole 23 different markets. But I have seen a surge ever since George Floyd, since COVID, George Floyd, that whole, it has been a surge of students that want, I mean, so many that today we're launching, we just decided to launch a HBCU. I was on the phone with, because I work with all the coaches, football and basketball coaches, and all the coaches, the sports programs, because I feel like that's another edge that we should have. But we're creating an HBCU sports app that's free for students to be able to connect with coaches, because there's students that want to go to HBCUs, and for coaches to be able to connect with students because of the disparity or the gap in funding to be able to get to go recruit like other schools, right? So there is definitely, you know, Houston Tillerson. So we're bringing the first HBCU to California, which is Houston Tillerson out of Austin, Texas. And the reason why the president was so excited about it is because of the housing situation. They are doing housing on another campus in Austin because they can't house all their students. They have so many students, they don't have housing for the students. So they actually rented or worked a deal out with another college in Austin so they can have additional housing. So down the line, you know, so we're opening this fall in San Diego, the first HBCU in California. And, but that's what was so motivating for her was that, you know, all of the schools, you know, Southern, because every day I deal with HBCU. So Southern University, I've had several students, they had a 500 and something student waiting list because they didn't have enough housing on their campus. I have two students right now, one that ended up housing 30 minutes from the campus, and the other one is like that, you know, they couldn't stay on campus, but they want to go there so bad that they just decided to get housing outside. And you know, we want them on campus because we want them to get the full experience. But it's happening around the country at a lot of our schools. You know, then we may have a few. I was on the phone with Russ College yesterday. You know, they're in Mississippi, and because of the thing that's happening, this whole little thing. So I think they're having a little thing because of that little thing, you know, that big thing that's happening with that whole mysterious thing that happened in Mississippi. So I think they're getting a little brunt of that. Huh?
You talking about the hanging?
No, the Nolan Wells thing.
Oh, no.
Because that was the same thing. Yeah. So I think because of, you know, that, you know, because we've been getting some DMs and stuff. So I'm just saying, but other than that, I would say probably almost 100% of the HBCUs are experiencing increase in enrollment. I mean, Howard alone, you know, even when you talk about the de-enroll thing, when people were thinking, what happened? Did they de-enroll? The bottom line was the lot of over 500 of those students, they didn't follow the guide. Like they didn't do everything they're supposed to do on time. So, you know, how it happens at schools, they de-enroll you if you don't get your things in time. So they were able to rectify. I had one of our students that we had that was able to get his situation because he was one of the de-enroll students, but actually he just got on the campus on Thursday. So he's there, everything worked out. So they did work it out for the students that could be worked out for, but some of the students, they said this, it was what the last call was, the last call, but they had over 40,000 applications. Mm-hmm. And I think they only accepted 2,000, a little over, like almost 2,500 students.
Okay, now does your organization, because I don't know entail what your organization mm-hmm. does. I know you say you work with the students, but you mentioned about housing. So do you have a department?
We just do full service. So I do the Black College Expo around the country. Black College Expo, I started 27 years ago here in Los Angeles at mm-hmm. the LA Convention Center. Mm-hmm. And was it start 2000 1999 we start planning. So 2000, and in 2004 we added like all the other markets, Oakland, DC. We add, then from there we added Chicago, New York, Atlanta, Miami, Houston, Dallas, Detroit, New Jersey, New York, Rochester. So we're in like 23 different markets, Monterey, and a lot of the California cities. And so what that means is because we're a nonprofit and we provide educational services, we're in schools too. We provide social emotional mentoring, college and career planning, and tutoring. We end up doing full service wraparound for a lot of students. So what that means is we, out of all the demand from parents and students, we just kind of like don't turn anybody away. So we just operate into whatever the need is. So we're kind of like a hub. So I was just telling a student today, whether you, I was so funny. I was on with one of the executives at one of the companies, ticket companies, and he was like, "You know what? I'm one of your alumni because I came to your expo when you were at the Javits Center in New York." And so it's so funny. So, you know, I told him we're like a hub, whether you need it for your students. Like you have now a lot of our people that graduated have their kids. So we've been helping their kids and we help with everything. If it's trying to help them find additional money, trying to help them with housing, trying to help them with whatever we can because we work directly with the HBCUs. I work with all the HBCU presidents, vice presidents, students of academic affairs, just trying to figure out ways to make sure that, first of all, there's a village when our students get there. And then second of all, you can get a student in college, but it's about getting them through. So it's really building a to and through system, and then even making sure that they have work experience so they can get jobs. So it's our careers, I should say. So that's what it is. It's a full wraparound service. So working with, you know, students, meeting with where they are, and then just really helping them get into college. You know, definitely we have partnerships with all 105 HBCUs, or especially the four-year colleges. And then we do work with all colleges too. You know, we work with all the California colleges, you know, the New York, you know, so because when we go in these markets, we end up working with all the college systems, the CUNY and the SUNY, and you know, whatever the system is in all the different states that we're in. So we're a full service program. We not we set we do a lot, but it's not like, you know, it's, you know, we do what we can to help as many as we can.
Right. Now, what is your website, please, so then I can look.
It's NCR. If you did blackcollegeexpo.com, it's probably easy, but it's ncrfoundation.org. But if you put in blackcollegeexpo.com, it'll still come. They all point to the same thing, so you'll still get it.
NCR.org.
ncrfoundation.org. National College Resources
Thank
Foundation
you. Gotcha.
is our website. And you know, I don't mind sharing. If you want me to share a little bit, I can.
Yes, if you will, please, because I'm
Yeah, I was gonna say,
Rashiki, are you still there? He may have stepped away. He
yeah, I
had to
don't
give
know.
you permission to
I think
share.
he had you have Lionel Henson and Rashid, he is still on, if you're asking.
Yeah, Rashiki. Are you there, Rashiki? Okay. When you come back, he'll give you
Okay,
permission.
I just sent a request. So
All
that way
right.
it kind of get, because I know we don't know, and it's really just about, you know, even on our website, we have applied to HBCU. Everything I try to do for free, because I don't want students to have an excuse why they can't be successful. I just say that's my model. So it's
Correct.
just whatever we have, we're just trying to create you know, God put me on this earth to be a vessel for young people. So I know my calling. My purpose is to be a vessel and to help as many kids as I can to hopefully change as many positive outcomes. And really, at the end of the day, it's to break poverty cycles. If I just had to strip it all down, it's just to break poverty cycles. Because I, you know, we need to look at the best way to do that. And it's not just for students. A lot of times you have to, and what does the family look like too? So we do even do stuff for adult learners. If adults, they didn't finish school and they want to go back, or they're looking to start, or they want to get a certification, we even offer that. It's just like whatever it takes to improve and empower our community. That's what I'm all for. I'm all for that, whatever
All
it
right.
takes.
Brother Willie Jow, you have any questions or comments?
Um,
Comments.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Can you hear me, Professor Roth?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
We hear you.
Do give him a thumbs up. Give him a reactionary so he can see.
Yeah. We hear you.
You hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I gave him a thumbs up so he can see that.
Hello, doctor. Hello, Dr. Price.
Hello, how are you?
My name is, I'm good, sister, I'm good. I currently work within the Long Beach Unified School District here in California.
Yes, I was just with you guys.
Okay, so you're familiar with the student success program that they-
I'm working with Jonah McGee and Jamila.
Yeah, Jonah McGee, yeah. Jonah McGee went to FAMU.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. We brought our HBCU caravan to Long Beach and we're bringing it again this year. And we just hosted a free HBCU Stump and Shake Cheer and Majorette Camp at Cabrillo High School.
Cabrillo, okay.
Yeah, we did it on August 1st and 3rd.
Okay.
And you're nice.
Yeah, we got echoing. I don't know why, but it's something going on.
I just started.
Okay, okay.
It might be Brother Henson. Maybe he might have two things open. Do you have two things open?
Okay.
Yeah, one of yours. Mute one of yours.
Okay, is that better?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Thank God. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Great. I've been working with the school district for about almost 4 years, but I work in the substitute capacity, but I only do middle school and high school because I want to attempt to save them from the prison industrial complex.
Yes.
My experience, I'm a retired parole agent, and I worked with young people in the inner city for a lot of years.
Okay.
And I noticed that you mentioned that there's an HBCU that you're looking to open up in San Diego?
Yeah, we're bringing it to California. Originally, it was, I actually discussed it on the Jennifer Hudson show.
Claremont College or something? You're going to go to Claremont?
Yeah, we were
going to
originally do it at, originally it was always San Diego, but it was going to be San Diego and the University of Laverne.
Right.
The president at the time was very progressive, and I really love working with Dr. Pardis Madavi. And so when she was not going to continue to be president, I just thought that it would be, I look at things that I feel like I want to be in situations where it could be successful. Yeah. And so I literally, we were working with the San Diego County Office of Education, Dr. Gatto, who was very excited. And then he also retired last year. And so with that, I actually went to Brother Terry Brooks, who went to Texas Southern, who is the pastor at Bayview Baptist Church out
San Diego.
In San Diego.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So he was gung-ho. He also has the facilities. His campus where the church sits on is a campus. It used to be a schoolhouse there. Mm-hmm. So it's set up for classrooms and everything. And then they also have another 9 acres of land that's undeveloped that can potentially grow into a community center, housing and all of that. So
uh-huh. He's also an Omega, my fraternity.
Yes,
brother.
He is. Yes,
yeah,
he
so,
is.
Yeah, so
yes.
Good stuff.
Is that why
good
I
stuff.
See this purple tie on you with a purple
That's why that's why you see it, sister. That's why you see it representing.
I
representing.
Love it. Yeah, so yeah, Pastor Brooks is I love him. We actually host our San Diego Black College Expo on that campus every year. We've been doing it there for the last 7 years. We host it on that campus, which is awesome. So Yes. So please reach out. Please stay in touch. Reach out. And I know
I
right now they're looking for professors. So if anyone, I will make that announcement that if you're interested in teaching at for this new HBCU we're opening, Historically Black College is basically a satellite campus of Houston Tellison that will start and then to a branch campus. But Dr. Melva Wallace is the president right now at Houston Tillerson University. And they're doing some very, very, very progressive things at that university.
Okay. Does that require, I don't have any master's degree. I do have a bachelor's, but—
Yeah, you know, I would put you in touch with them. I'll give you, Dr. Turk is gonna be the person, and then she will let you know who to reach out to, but I will share with you out loud that Dr. Turk is leading the charge, and okay. I can put you in touch with her. Okay. I'll put my email in the chat to make it easy. I'm accessible to everybody. I give my number to every student in the country because I never want them to have an excuse of why.
You're a blessing, sister.
Because at the end of the day, come on, it only take a few minutes.
Barry Thomas, right? He's here, but he's in the bathroom. He's at my place right here.
Excellent.
Yeah, he reminded me that you're going to be on here today, so I just want to,
feel free from there, and then we could go deeper, whatever you need. I'm here to serve, brother.
Okay.
All just passing through one time. They say, we passing through, we just passing through.
And it's not how you die, it's how you live. Mm-hmm. What you live. The only concern I have, which is a great concern, I work with a lot of young Black males, and we have a high rate of suicide going on amongst our youth. Yes. And how have you addressed that? I know even in some of the college campuses that's been a problem. I know you probably have a lot of programs in place to help support that, to advocate for young people so that they can talk to people. But where are you at with that? Do you see
it's definitely, I'm going to tell you, the numbers are astounding. I was looking, because I always take notes when I'm looking at stuff. Let me share something. Let me see. I'm just looking. So according to the national statistics, more than 40% of college students report that they are too depressed to focus, and more than 60% overwhelmingly anxiety, and one in 10 college students had a plan for suicide. That's huge. That's a big number.
Wow, it is.
That is a big number. So, you know, I'm always listening to stats, data, and I've seen it, even amongst I've seen a huge increase among just Black, you know, that was never a thing among the Black population. You never, and now you're hearing it, and to be crazily alarming, it's starting in elementary school. I've heard elementary kids. So it is, and I think it just comes again, sense of belonging, you know, feeling like you matter, love, needing and wanted. A lot of the students I talk to, they feel like people don't care. You know, we have a high, our population, you look at the homeless rate, just look at California, and then 43% of the people homeless are Black. And we don't represent 43%.
That's true.
So, and COVID exposed a lot of that. So, you know, I'm deep into, you know, James. So you must know James, Brila.
Yes.
So you work
with Bridge Builders Foundation.
Yes, doing an awesome job. I love. Job. So yes, it's, you know, we're going to have to be very intentional about not only just, our grandkids, because some of us are grandparents, grandkids' friends or our kids' friends, you would be surprised at the number of mental health situations, because this generation suffers in silence.
Yeah,
that's the thing. That's why I keep saying that my focus are young people, because they suffer in silence. And unfortunately, we wanted our kids to have it better than we did, just like our parents wanted it better for us.
Yes.
And in a lot of cases, they don't have the grit that we have. And it's only because they got it. So I call them microwave babies, right?
Yeah.
Because they put it in, they expect, I mean, but think about it. Technology is that. Enter on the computer. Everything is quick and fast.
Right.
So it's like, the world makes them feel like everything is quick and fast, when in reality, it's not that. So you become depressed. You know, you got social media also adding. Everybody think they should have money. Everybody think, you know, it's just all of these things that they're dealt. So we have to stay very close to our young people and their friends. I'm saying our kids, even our own kids.
Yeah.
I know situations of kids from great families that it didn't turn out well. Things have happened. And I don't even want to say that S word, but we don't know what's going on a lot of times. because we thinking people are made the way we were built and they're not built the same. So we really do have to try to have a conversation with our own kids and with their friends and with their friends. You know, we might have to be that anchor for them, because sometimes it can be in our own household and we don't recognize it. My son had mentioned he was in a depressed state. I never forget. He shared that with me when he was in college. So, you know, you just don't know. You assume a lot of things, but you know, you never know what the outside forces are giving them. You never know what they're going through while they're in school, or what people, you don't know who's bullying them.
Yes.
You don't know what they're dealing with. So that's it's true. Like, you know, I know my other son told me they used to touch his hair. I mean, I hear this now as they're adults, but they're like, they never told me that stuff. They never came home and said that. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So we really need to I'm going to say a rap song. We better check ourselves before we wreck
ourselves. That's real.
Before we wreck, because I think we need to be real in saying our kids need to know that they matter. They need to know that they're loved. They need to know that it's going to be okay. And it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay that it might not happen today. You know, it's in God's time. And that's the other thing I learned. Just in scripture, it's in God's time. It ain't in our time. That's So we have to really think about adopting. I say adopting loosely, but I'm just saying making sure that we pay attention and we listening and we converse with our young people and spend extra time and ask them how they're feeling, even in the schools that you're in. Brother Henson, you got to ask how are you feeling today? Like, what's going on? What did you do over the weekend? Because we assume that people have the same things and they don't. We assume people can get to programs and they can't. They don't have transportation.
Right.
They don't have a parent. We have Crenshaw, last I checked, over 70% of the population were foster kids.
Yeah. Real talk.
So we got to realize, and that's around the country. You know, in Dallas, I realized we had a lot of single fathers raising their kids. Mm-hmm. In Dallas, the dads were more involved than the moms. So you got so many different scenarios going on. I was shocked in Dallas when I met with the district and they were sharing that. So you don't know, you know, kind of like, we don't know what's going on, you know?
Yeah, that's real.
So we need to make sure we keep our ear to the ground. We got to think about these young people. I mean, because it really is with them. If you really think about it, it really, our future lies in them. And if they don't feel good, and if they don't feel loved, and if they don't feel like they have hope and empowered, then everything we're talking about right now is mute.
That's real.
All right.
Thank you, sister. I appreciate you very much.
All right.
Keep up the great work.
Brother Hembrick, you have a comment? Brother Joe, are you there?
Yeah, evening. I appreciate your presentation, sister.
Thank you, brother.
I'm retired now, but that last comment about the kids, I know in 94 I did a study at Centennial.
Centennial and Compton or Centennial Corona? You know, you got to say that nowadays.
From the Hub City, girl.
Hub City, right? Look, I'm great at the West Side. No, I'm just kidding. I'm out to California. Go ahead.
70% of the black students were in that situation, not with a parent, group home.
Yes.
That sort of thing. And you really have to talk to those kids to see what's going on. But if the kids love you, they'll bring you what.
Yes, they will. Yes, they will.
I love the black college thing. I worked with a brother for years on, you know, Brother Marcus Thomas. He's out of Howard. He's the.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard his name too. I want to say I was in a meeting. Yes, somebody talked about him.
That's MT, right? MT. Called him MT. I know Marcus Thomas. Yeah.
What's his frat name? His frat name is Brutus. Brutus.
Okay. All right, brother.
We've been friends forever, and I used to help him run the stuff when he was coming through Compton, getting kids to go on the tour.
Mm-hmm.
Black college thing, and, you know, by trade, I'm a historian. And I talk to a lot of students that have attended or currently attending Black colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And some folks by them, you know, like through history, and they didn't know, like I was talking to a sister that went to Tuskegee.
Oh, awesome.
And she awesome. Didn't know who, what's the name was, the man who built the school?
Booker T. Washington.
Right. And I question a lot of them that are in the sororities and the fraternities about the African side of it. You know, I deal with my brother Marcus all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They borrowed all of that from Africans. Why are we still using Greek stuff? You know, and it's my contention that we need to wake up our minds wherever we are, Black college, Peter, mm-hmm. wherever. But that history and knowing that knowledge, I've seen what it has done to kids once they realize our true history. Because a lot of us
don't. Oh, yeah, it makes a huge, could I tell you, I literally watch in front of, that makes a huge difference. That's why I've advocated for teaching Black history, African history, Black history, because it makes it, I watched a seventh grade class that was in turmoil that we were working in. The kids were wrestling, roughhousing. I mean, they were going. And my son actually happened to be, he loves history. So he actually started teaching them history. And I actually have a testimonial from a kid who was just, he was just going. And when they started, they did everything from music to everything. They just talked Black history. They would do subjects. And that kid ended up being a 3.8 student. He was a seventh grader going crazy. By the time, he said he never forgot that history. When he became a high school student, he ended up graduating with a 3.8 GPA. Because of that, just understand. And it's just, and I feel like that's what our HBC, it just gives you your value. You got to understand, a lot of us don't feel like we have value, that because you got to look at what they're seeing every day. Look at what our kids see every day.
I agree.
You know, so, I mean, I was saying, I remember in, you know, I'll be like, we got check cashing places. We had funeral homes. We had fast food. You know, I just think about what I saw.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, and then you go and you wonder why we don't have a Whole Foods. Why we don't, you know, you start thinking, you know, it makes you, college makes you think. It makes you like, that's why I walked out of Ross class with my eyes bucked out. It makes you realize your surroundings. Your thinking is different.
Exactly. And just so, as I leave, you were talking about the lack of housing at the HBCU.
Yes.
And actually, Marcus Thomas' son, he'll be a junior this year, and they only allow sophomores and freshmen, I think, in the housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they limit it on what, yeah.
Works out.
Limit it on what.
Take a lesson from Booker T and get those students to build their own dorm. Build, mm-hmm. You know, we can take these lessons from our history and come up with the solutions that we need for today. And I'm through. Appreciate you, yes. Sister.
Thank you, okay. Brother. All I right. appreciate you. Appreciate
all
you.
Right. Brother,
and I want to make, you know what? I want to make sure you guys know something too. So they're asking us to produce these schools with the same criteria of our PWIs, when the funding is like night and day. I mean, literally night and day. The endowment for Cheney when I was doing this was $1 million. I mean, you're talking about a school that started in 1837, and the endowment is only what I just said. I mean, it's like, come on, you got the minimum at most of these schools at PWIs, they're at $15 million. $15 million is the endowment. So 50, I'm sorry, $15 billion. The top PWI's endowment are operating at a minimum of $15 billion. This is six times the amount of the top 10 HBCUs all together. You heard what I just said?
Yeah.
But they're to operate at the same level of graduation rate, same level of this, and you're funded way less, and didn't realize you were funded. There's an article that I'm going to send you, Rob, that it's just like, when you look at, and then when you try to get the money, They say, well, you need to go do this, this, and this to get the money. But if you don't have money and they ask you to do this to get the money, how are you going to get the money? So you got to understand. So a lot of times the funding is, that is a huge thing. There's a huge, because the funding isn't the same.
Okay.
And there's schools that are probably trillions, but it's billions. You know, the case in Maryland with the HBCUs. You know, you know what's happening at Tennessee State, still trying to get their $5 billion. I mean, so it's so many other factors that they face. It's a huge disparity. It's a huge gap, lack of resources. It's just so many things that come into play. And even if you say, well, they get the funds and the money doesn't go right, don't think it don't happen that way at the BWIs too. I know some cases where I was in on. They ain't using the funds the way it's supposed to be used. So, you know, it's just so many factors. That's why I say that at the end of it, though, and at the root of all of it, I'll just say I look at outcomes and how our young people are the impact that it's had on them and the empowerment that it's given them to continue the marathon. I just say it like that. That's the biggest thing.
All right.
And if you look, there's a video on the homepage that'll kind of give you a clear view. It's on the homepage at the bottom. And that video kind of gives you a clear view of everything. It's a short little 3-minute video. If you're on there, brother, it's at the bottom. If you go down to the bottom, no, go to the homepage. Go to the homepage, like go down to the bottom. Yeah, go, just click on the logo. Click on the logo to the top left. Just click on that and it'll take you to the home. Go down to the bottom. Right there. That video right there kind of gives you, make sure you hit your sound thing when you share, though. I don't know if you hit that. I don't know if you hit the sound. No. When you go back to your share, like unshare and go back, you don't have to do this with, I'm dealing with young people every day, guys. That's why. When you go to your share, look on your right side. You should see audio, share audio, and max. Yeah. Okay.
Can you tell everyone what your foundation is?
National College Resources Foundation is a 501c3 educational enhancement agency. Our mission is to curtail high school dropout rate and increase enrollment to degree and or certificate programs among underserved, underrepresented, at-risk, low-resource, homeless, and foster students. We have several programs. You know, we have our college and career program, we have our internship program, STEAM program, student athlete. We've helped over 600,000 students.
I actually got recruited by Paul Quinn at a Black College Expo too. When I was in high school, and I worked my first expo 2 years ago, and that is what I was telling Rashid when I met him.
My favorite part would probably be the work program. I work in two offices, so I'm one of the president's interns, and then I also work in enrollment management, getting real-world experience recruiting kids as well.
Viva! Latino College Expo!
Yes. As we see need with our students, our community, we try to create these new programs to support our underserved and underrepresented students within the Latino community and beyond, such as our programs that help our STEM students, our athletes, right, with our HBCU combines. We have so many programs to make sure that we're supporting all of our students regardless of where they came from. We only focus on where they're going.
Before you walk in the door, you're not going to just apply for a job and not know about the company. Read their website, their mission statement, what their initiatives are, what roles do they have.
And the movement program.
We're working with students and helping them connect to college, universities, and we're providing social emotional support to really assist them.
We have another set of the Dynamic Duo, and these awards go to.
It's important to have events like the STEAM Expo because it's not always stuff that's covered in school. You can talk about things all you want, but until you see people that are actually living that, it's not necessarily the same. So you had a bunch of people out here that have been doing this for years, decades, and getting that firsthand experience from them can ignite a different level of passion inside of our students.
Very grateful and just blessed for this opportunity. So today we did the Power of Your Voice seminar. It's important for us to engage, educate, and also inspire students to use the power of their voice.
I work for the National Party on behalf of the Democrats, and essentially my role is to help support the administration, including Vice President Harris and President Biden.
Do whatever you want to do well, and the world will find a way to reward you for what you have done.
College is such a unique experience. There's so many enriching moments. You don't want that time to pass you by.
In high school, we have like insecurities in relationships, and that's normal. You already have guessed it or not. Today, we're going to take a deep dive into how Latinos are shaping the future.
We are National College Resources Foundation. Our mission is to curtail high school dropout rate and increase enrollment to degree and or certificate programs. We can't do programs like this without our partners, our sponsors. So we are inviting you to come and be a partner and a sponsor.
So just to kind of give you guys.
Excellent. Brother Roger T, are you still there?
I'm here.
Hey, do you have any comments?
I've been doing some things here. So I just know that the HBCUs is a resource for us to do things that we need to do for ourselves and others. You know, like she was mentioning earlier, that I heard that some of the leading scholars comes from HBCUs. So that's a beautiful thing. It's a testament to the strength and power that we have as African people. So I just appreciate the presentation and all of the great comments that were made.
Yeah, let me just say this.
Thank you.
Up until the mid-1970s, Grambling provided more professional football players in the NFL than any other college. And it wasn't even playing Division I. Eddie Robinson was one of the leading football coaches for championship. Mississippi Valley, that's where Jerry Rice came from.
Mm-hmm. He sure did.
And we can go on. Prior to Blacks getting into the major league, they competed with each other amongst the colleges as sports and things of that nature. But the Tuskegee Airmen came out of Tuskegee.
Right. And did you know that because we work with his son. His son runs our African and Aviation Traveling Museum. Mm-hmm. Chauncey Spencer Sr. went to Virginia University Lynchburg, which is my alma mater. Him and his Ann Spencer, Hall of Renaissance, but he's the reason why the Tuskegee Airmen, him and Del White went and spoke with President Truman, well, then Senator Truman, who became president, to integrate the Air Corps, which is now the Air Force, to bring the Tuskegee Airmen to even integrate. So it was Chauncey Spencer Sr. and Del White that made that happen. And he went to a HBCU.
We have a number of alumni. One of the people that's one of our speakers and presenters went to Langston.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And we have featured Langston University faculty staff from the HBCU. But the challenge is, we're on the West Coast, which is the worst coast, because it costs so much
to get
from here to them schools and the tuition and things. And many of the students, they have to make an adjustment when they leave home, because of the lifestyle is different. It's closer,
yes,
the classes are smaller, and they have a commitment to get you through school if you just, you know, present yourself. Mm-hmm. Now, during the 68, the Black Revolt of the Black Athlete, many HBCUs, some of their athletes participated in that struggle with Harry Edwards. A lot of people went and participated. John Carlos and Smith, they weren't even supposed to be there. The boxer, he wasn't supposed to be there. They were supposed to boycott in 1968, but they took junior college athletes. That's how Spencer Haywood them got known, because all the major colleges wouldn't participate in the boycott of the Olympics in 1968, and that was the revolt of black athletes. But they deemed black colleges as safe colleges. Now Howard, there's an argument of Howard is being classified as one of the 100 black colleges because it's named after General Howard, white man, and it was really designed for mulatto kids, mixed kids, when it first started. White men who had babies by black women, that's how Howard got started, supposedly. But they included as one of the 100 black colleges. That's one of the arguments that they argue. But the point is that the 100 black colleges have played a major role mm-hmm. in our progress, our intellectual wealth, and produce, as Dr. Price has said, some of our outstanding leaders, from Martin Luther King, the former president of Morehouse. Morehouse produced some of the best business people, entrepreneurs of today, because they come out of there with that entrepreneur spirit out of Morehouse and things like that. I know a number of students that went there and they wanted to start their own business as soon as they get out of school. But we want to thank Teresa. We don't want to keep all your time. We appreciate your time.
Yes, I know. I was just getting ready to say yes. I only because I have another appointment, but you're more important. So,
make your closing comments, then we're gonna close out.
Yes,
gonna say what's on tomorrow.
I'm just gonna say again. I go back to the student. I was on with the district today. Their absenteeism in elementary and middle is 43%. It is an underserved community. I don't even need to say, you already know what that makeup looks like. And I have to go to the student again and say, we have to make sure that we adopt a kid, take in a kid, empower a kid, empower our kids, our kids' friends, our grandkids, their friends. Just make sure that the kids know that they are loved, needed, and wanted. Our HBCUs, our educational churches, is great pathways. They produce leaders. They give them substance. You know, every student I talk to just talks about their experience, especially if they can hang in past the homesickness. They end up just loving it. So I'll just say we all need to invest in HBCUs, whether you go, don't go, whatever. I don't care if it's a dollar, a penny, what they say, a nickel for your thoughts, a penny for your thoughts, a nickel for your dime, whatever that song is. A dime if we tell them that we love HBCUs, whatever. But we need to all look at supporting them and just know that it is a challenge. Our presidents, the turnover rate sometimes gets a little high because of the challenge of trying to work in a system that is not made for you. So I'll just say that.
And Teresa, remember last time I really saw you before we hooked back up was with Lenny out at Chino Hill Ford.
Yep.
All right.
Yes. Lenny Woods, may Lenny Woods rest his soul too. For those of you that knew Lenny. Lenny Woods, yep.
All right.
God bless you. Thanks. Everybody good? Please keep in touch with me, guys.
I'm
here to serve. If you have any young people, parents, whoever needs whatever, just we the hub, man. We your hub with you.
All right. Thank you.
God bless you guys.
All right.
Thank
you again, Dr. White.
Habari Gani.
In Jama, Sante San Tuta now. My brother Roger Key.
Yes. Brother Ijao had his hand raised. Brother Ijao.
Well, brother, my comment was just related to the brother talking about the Greek concept and just from a historical basis. The reason why black fraternities and sororities did use the Greek template, if you will, was because blacks were not even allowed to come together no more than two people at a time. So they used that particular organizational structure to be able to organize those fraternities and sororities. And just to be clear, I did go to a Long Beach State, whereas we fought to make sure that we were not calling ourselves Greeks. And I still struggle, battle all across the country to get our people to understand that there's nothing Greek about us. All it is a stolen legacy, just so on the brothers to clarify with the brother made the comment about the blacks at fraternity sororities at the HBCU, Tuskegee, who still running around and don't have a clue about the history. And I'm thankful for Professor Raw and Long Beach State, because we changed our council from the Black Greek Council to the Black Egyptian Council. We didn't call ourselves Greeks. Nobody walked around calling themselves Greeks, just to be clear.
And you unified with all the fraternity. They all came up under one umbrella, and we had a unity table. But that's good. Brother Robson T, tomorrow?
No show for tomorrow, but on Thursday we have Roots Reggae Reasoning Session, and we have Pablo Black. He's one of those guys from the 60s and the 70s, going all the way back there. And then we on Saturday we have Brother Olamenji out of the Chicago area, and that's a message to the Black diaspora. That's on Saturday morning. Saturday morning. Mm. Okay. Mm. And it says 6 p.m. That is incorrect. I'm going to have that changed. It's at 10 a.m. in the morning. And it's on the flyer at the bottom. As you can see, it's 10 a.m.
Tell them about the book, too.
What's that, Professor Rock?
About our book.
Oh, the book. I'm going to have it posted up. In about 2 days, you can be able to purchase it on Amazon. Our book is out. It's Community Education Network, Articles, Volume 1. Professor Amin Rod, Dr. Terry Strong, Brother Thomas Muhammad, and then me. I'm on there also, Raski Maskani, so authored by the four of us. So that book is officially out and will be ready for sale maybe in 2 days on Amazon. Okay. And then will you
good
a link to go straight to that on the website coming up soon.
All right. I'm trying to get either Carl Douglas, Johnny Cochran's assistant attorney.
Carl Douglas,
Spencer Haywood, or either somebody from Black Lives Matter for next Tuesday. We'll have a guest. All right.
Each one teach one in Black Conscious Corner. Everybody continue to have a great day.
All right.
All right.
Good.